Conference muted.
This release, Umicore achieved again last year in 2008 strong results after having realized a record performance in 2007. However, we have to say that last year was characterized by a stellar performance in the first part of the year, followed by a somewhat more challenging second half. And that is, of course, as everyone would have expected things to turn, knowing how the financial crisis and the economic situation developed in the second part of the year. Indeed, the business climate deteriorated quite rapidly in the fourth quarter, in particular, in many sectors of the economy. And naturally, this deterioration of the economy has started to affect several of our businesses, most notably in our precious metals products and catalyst business division. As a result, we continue to adapt our manufacturing footprint to market demand, and we have recently implemented a certain number of measures to that effect, some of which are structural in nature, some of them are temporary. Actually, the majority of the measures that we have implemented so far are of a temporary nature. And while we do what is necessary to preserve our businesses and our competitive positions in the short term, I have to say that our focus is on the long term, and we stay the course, we stay the strategic course, and continue our research and investment efforts for the longer term. And our financial discipline, our consistency in running the business and maintaining a strong balance sheet is now giving us the strength that we need to support our long-term development projects while going through some more challenging times in the short term. Our balance sheet is strong indeed. We have a net debt today, or at the end of 2008, I should say, that represented less than one time EBITDA. And this, after having returned significant amounts of cash in the course of 2008, both through share buybacks and dividend payments. Talking about dividends, the board will propose to the shareholders at the end of April of this year to approve a dividend payment of 65 euro cents per share. That is equivalent to the dividend payment that was made a year earlier. And this is also in line with our stated policy of paying a stable or gradually increasing dividend. If we look at the key figures for 2008, we see that revenues increased by more than 200 million euro in 2008 compared to 2007, driven primarily by substantial growth in our precious metal services and advanced materials divisions. Also, for the first time, we included for a full year the catalyst activities that were acquired from Delphi at the end of 2007. Recurring EBIT came in at 355 million euro. That is practically the same level as in 2007 and corresponds to a return on capital employed of close to 18%, so well above our pre-tax cost of capital. As you know, we pursued the share buyback program that was initiated at the end of 2007, and you see that our earnings per share was clearly benefiting in 2008 from the earnings accretive effect of those share buybacks. And that is the major reason that our EPS increased by some 7% last year over 2007. We also made last year very significant progress with our key investment programs, and that is also translating in capital expenditures that last year exceeded 200 million euro for the full year. On the next slide, we see revenue and EBIT and recurring EBIT graphs that are actually illustrating the trends that I've just commented on. The good overall performance of 2008 however, should not mask the rapid deterioration of the business climate in the last quarter of last year. The decline in the automotive market, which started in the US in the second part of 2007, has extended quite rapidly to all other regions in the course of 2008 and has tended to accelerate in the second part of 2008, and we have seen quite a number of production cuts being implemented in the automotive sector in the last part of the year, to such an extent that car production was actually down some 21% in the last quarter of last year, and even close to 30% for the month of December alone, while on a full year basis production looks still reasonably okay at minus 4% versus 2007. What we also observed in that respect is that OEMs, car manufacturers, did implement some extended maintenance shutdowns in December and January, and shut down their production lines for an extended period of time in order to reduce their inventory levels. The downturn in the economy has also started to affect the electronic sector, in particular at year-end, with lower sales of many portable electronics applications. As far as laptop computers are concerned, we continue to see some growth there, although at a much moderate pace than what was generally anticipated. And finally, the construction industry is also starting to see the effect or to feel the effects of the credit crisis overall. A trend that has developed across many industries is the reduction of inventory levels, and the destocking that we have seen in the past few months and that we continue to see is actually exacerbating the effect of reduced end demand. The destocking effect is not coming as a surprise. Actually, after a period of uninterrupted growth of more than 5 years, during which we have seen many industries building inventories in anticipation of continuing linear growth, it is normal that this process has to reverse somewhat, and that inventories have to now be worked out of the supply chain before production lines resume production at a decent level. This deterioration of the business climate is in the fourth quarter is clearly reflected in the second half revenues and EBIT developments for Umicore, and that is a picture that you see on the graphs of revenues, EBIT, and cash flows for last year. Typically, we see lower revenues and recurring EBIT in the second part of the year. That has to do to a large extent with seasonal effects. In 2008, you see that the reduction in revenues and EBIT is somewhat more pronounced than in prior years. Also, we have to say that compared to 2007, our EBIT was somewhat affected by adverse currency movements in a number of currencies that will be commented on in the financial section of the presentation. And finally, you see that the cash flows were very positive in the second part of last year. This was to a large extent driven by a significant reduction in working capital, and you may remember that there was a working capital buildup in the first part of the year driven by the growth in sales and the high metal prices that we had seen at that point in time. As I mentioned in the introduction, we continue to adjust our manufacturing footprint to market demand, and as a priority, we use temporary measures where those are available. This is the case, for instance, in Belgium, where we have technical unemployment measures, or in Germany, where we have some reduced work time schemes that are available to us. And such schemes provide us a degree of flexibility that is really desirable, because in the short term it enables us to preserve the competitive position of our businesses and reduce and adjust our capacities to market demand, while at the same time not losing the competencies and the skills that our people have and that we will need, of course, at the time the economy turns around and the demand starts picking up. Next to the temporary measures, we have also reduced the workforce somewhat by about 400 people in the consolidated companies, and that those measures have taken place between September of last year and the end of January, so it's not news today. It is something that has, I'm talking about measures that have already been implemented, announced. And those measures are, I would say, have taken place mostly in China, in Germany, and in the U.S. And as one would expect, they relate mainly to our precious metals products and catalysts activities. We have to add also that the workforce reduction of approximately the same amplitude has also taken place in our associate companies, in some of our non-consolidated joint ventures. More importantly, I would say that the reductions, whether they are temporary or more structural in nature, are not affecting our research efforts. And again, as I mentioned already, our aim is to preserve our businesses in the short term and to preserve our competitive positions while not compromising on our longer-term development potential. And I have to insist that our commitment in that respect is intact. That is also the message that we want to give with the next slide, where we show, where we illustrate indeed our commitment to long-term projects, starting with the picture of investments. In 2008, we completed a number of key investment projects. For instance, the new pre-concentration plant in our precious metals refining activity in Hoboken. That facility is now fully operational and provides us with increased operational flexibility and also improved throughput times. We have also made a number of investments to upgrade our capabilities, technical testing and production capabilities in automotive catalysts across the globe. And we have also we commissioned our new plant in Argentina that has started production of APIs or active pharmaceutical ingredients. These are a few examples of key projects that were implemented and completed in 2008, and in total we invested some 216 million euro in the course of last year. We have some other key investment programs that are underway, and some of which should come to completion in 2009. This is, for instance, the case of our fairly significant investments in rechargeable battery materials in China and in South Korea. Those investments are key to us because they will enable us to produce the next generation of lithium-ion battery materials. We're also building a new plant in the U.S. in Quapaw, Oklahoma, to produce germanium substrates, and this is also a very significant step for us in the sense that we see the new applications for terrestrial concentrated photovoltaics as well as LEDs taking off very nicely. So we're looking forward to having those new capabilities and capacities in place in the U.S. In less than a year's time. Finally, another example is the new plant that we're building in China, in the southern part of China, in the Guangdong province, to have recycling capabilities for precious metals, and the plant will also produce some semi-finished and alloyed materials for the jewelry industry. All in all, roughly speaking, we would expect our capital expenditures in 2009 to be in the same order as what we spent in 2008. Our commitment to the long term is also to the long term growth project is also reflected by the research and development expenditures. Last year, our R&D expenses exceeded 165 million euro, which corresponded to about a little bit more than 7% of revenues. The increase, I must say, is partly due to, again, the full-year inclusion of the activities acquired from Delphi, and the research activities there were fully integrated in our own research configurations. We also increased the efforts in a number of corporate projects, corporate meaning projects that are falling outside of the scope of our current business units today. And you have, for those of you who have attended the Capital Markets Day in December, you will probably recognize some of the substance there. Similar to investments, we plan today to have to continue our R&D efforts at a pace that would be somewhat equivalent to what was done in 2008. The focus also is unchanged. About 80% of our research goes today into clean technology domains. And again, for those of you who attended the Capital Markets Day in December, where we had the somewhat more elaborate information session on what is in the technology pipeline in terms of clean technologies, I would just remind today that the bulk of our research efforts can be clustered along three domains. One is materials that go into the storage and the production of clean energies. That is the case for rechargeable battery materials activities or activities in photovoltaics or fuel cells. The second big cluster of research efforts would be for recycling solutions. And third, we also spend a significant amount of efforts in environmental solutions and technologies that are there to reduce environmental impacts. Now let's now move to the business review for the four segments, starting with advanced materials. In advanced materials, we saw significant revenue growth, and in particular, our revenues grew well in cobalt and specialty materials, where we saw high demand in most segments of the activities, in chemicals, in tool materials, and in rechargeable battery materials. However, in the fourth quarter of last year, demand started to decline, especially in rechargeable batteries and in tool material applications. And I must say that the sluggish demand that we saw there in the fourth quarter of last year is continuing in January and should be continuing in the first quarter of this year. This is partly due to the destocking effect or the destocking process that is taking place at some of our major customers. And because of the destocking, it is difficult to make out today how long it will take before production restarts at more reasonable levels. In electro-optic materials, we had strong sales throughout the year, so we didn't see any decline in the last part of 2008. And I must say that the trend continues to hold for 2009. We saw also our sales of substrates for new applications in terrestrial applications and in LEDs taking off nicely. And these new applications account today for about 15% of the sales of our substrate revenues. You see also from the figures that the contribution from Element 6 abrasive was a bit lower than in 2007. There also we saw sales slowing down in the last part of 2008. That is partly due to reduced activity levels, especially in the oil and gas segments, as we saw indeed drilling activity levels trending down in the second part of last year. And there again, we also had some adverse currency movements that are somewhat reducing the contribution from Element 6. In precious metals products and catalysts, the picture is somewhat different. We had revenue growth 2. However, this is largely the effect of the full year inclusion of the Catalyst activities that were acquired from Delphi at the end of 2007. From a profitability point of view, we must say that the automotive Catalyst activity felt the full impact of the significant contraction that we saw in automotive production in the second part of the year, especially in the fourth quarter, and also was somewhat affected by negative mix effects. In other precious metals products and activities, we also started to feel the effects of the downturn. In particular, our technical materials activities is somewhat exposed to automotive construction and electronics applications, and our electroplating activity is also serving the electronic sector to a large extent. One of the exceptions in terms of continuing good performance is in the jewelry applications, where we continue to see very attractive levels of revenues. In precious metals services, we recorded an outstanding level of profitability. We had a strong growth of our revenues, and that was driven by a very favorable availability of both industrial byproducts, so residue streams from other industries, and at the same time, end-of-life materials. Now, we must also say that the performance, the profitability was somewhat supported by high metal prices, despite the fact that metal prices trended down in the second part of the year. It is true that the contract that we had entered into previously, and that provided some downside protection on the metal prices, have continued to support our profitability in the second part of the year. As I mentioned earlier, the new pre-concentration plant is now fully operational and enabled us to reduce inventory levels in the second part of 2008. We also had a very high contribution, I would say unusually high contribution to profits from our metals management activity. This was a conjunction of several factors, very exceptional trading conditions, and especially very high volatility, in particular for the PGM metals. The unit is making a living out of volatility. At the same time, we also had very high demand from some of our physical metals, such as, and you will not be surprised, such as gold for investment gold bars. In those troubled times, we see indeed gold as continuing to play its role as a safe haven. As far as the metals management activity is concerned, we said in the past that it would typically contribute some 10% of the recurring EBIT in a normal year. Normal year meaning in a year of normal metal price environment or stable metal price environment, I should say. Last year, it was, I would say, instead of being closer, instead of being some 10% of a somewhat smaller amount, it was closer to 20% of a much larger amount, reflecting those unusual trading conditions that I mentioned. In Zinc Specialties, our profitability improved in 2008, and this was to a large extent due to the improved contribution that we had in building products. You may remember that at the end of 2007, we were facing some production difficulties in that business unit that resulted in increased one-off costs. Those production difficulties were fully resolved in the first part of this year, and this is now fully reflected in our P&L. The construction sector, however, I must say, weakened somewhat in the course of 2008, and we'll talk about the trends at the end of the presentation. In our Zinc Chemicals and zinc battery materials activities, we saw very good levels of demand for most of the year, and as one would expect, a somewhat slowing trend in the last quarter, driven by the trend in some of our key end-user segments, such as the paint grade applications for shipbuilding or containers, and of course the alkaline battery segment is also driven by the consumer electronic demands. Now at this stage I would like to hand over to Martin to go through the financials, and then I will take over again to discuss the outlook for 2009.
Thank you, Mark. I think Mark has addressed most of the important elements of the income statement of the P&L and the balance sheet, but I will try and address those elements that are specifically financial. I think the first slide with the business group breakdown shows again the shift in profit contribution that we see this year, with the profit contribution of the precious metal products and catalyst at a lower level, and precious metal services representing for this year a higher part of recurring EBIT. The profit and loss statement, we have reached revenues that are now above 2 billion, so I mean a magic number, up 11%, and a recurring EBIT that's almost in line with last year of 355.3. The financial charges are slightly higher than last year, and in fact reflect a combination of things. They reflect the fact that the average debt for the year was somewhat higher, and also the geographical locations of that debt was higher. I mean, some regions in the world show at this point in time high interest rates and impact the interest expense significantly. It's something we're looking at to see how we can shift the funding in some geographical regions. The tax rate on recurring EBIT at 27%, pretty much in line last year, was 27.8%. It's a kind of percentage of tax that we expect to stay around. I mean, the decrease is clearly linked to the decrease of the German tax rate, but also of some mixed effects. We operate in many countries in the world, and shifts from one region to another in terms of profitability do have some minor impacts on changing the tax rate. Something that I will come back to is the detail of the non-recurrings, which this year are a very large amount. We have discussed in a special press release already a major part of that, but I'm coming back to that. And coming to, in total, to a net result of around 128 million, which represents which represents in terms of earnings per share, if we look at the recurring part, 1.93, which Mark has already talked about. Non-recurring items. So I think the first thing to mention is that non-recurring items mostly are non-cash in nature, and the most important ones, which represent pretty much the whole amount, have to do with the impairment that we took on Nearstar and the impairment we took on some of our zinc inventories that were brought in at relatively high levels, most of them being brought in around the time of the Nearstar divestiture. The Nearstar stake impairment, I think it's pretty clear to all of you, had to flow through the income statement because of the IFRS rules. As soon as we could not keep them at the current book value because of the information that Nearstar gave on the impairment, we only had one choice, and that is to take them through P&L. Any changes to the current value of the Nearstar shares, however, again, on IFRS rules, will flow through equity. Earnings per share, as I said, adjusted earnings per share at 1.93, clearly influenced by the share buyback activity, and as Mark already said, in line with our policy, we are proposing a steady dividend compared to last year, which is 65 cents per share. Cash flow development. When we look at the cash flows, I mean, one of the things that might surprise you is the fact that working capital is pretty much at a break-even level. What we see is that there was, due to the major strong business in the first three quarters, that there was a major increase of working capital, and you saw that reflected in the June statements. Even up to September, we saw an increase in working capital, and then we saw a sharp drop that more than offset the increase in the first three quarters. Some other elements that clearly had a very important contribution to the debt position of today is the share buyback, which accounted this year for 239 million, leading us to more than 340 million in total for the share buyback up to now of this 400 million program. So without that, it's clear that our debt would be much reduced and would be closer to 100 million. CapEx, and Mark talked about it, CapEx was a major investment this year, and we expect, as Mark said, CapEx to remain at that same level. So net debt evolution, we are below one time EBITDA, and you know, if I can give any guidance to how that's evolving, currently our debt level is continuing to go down. Debt levels and gearing remain low. Very strong balance sheet, I don't have to add. When we look at the debt composition and also our opportunity to use that debt, a major part of the debt is a revolving credit facility, of which we are using only half at this point in time. And the rest, the due dates for this debt are 2011 and another almost half 2013, bonds maturity 2012, and long-term loan maturity 2011. So we are well prepared to face the current credit crunch, which everybody, I think, in the business is feeling. Also commercial paper, where at the end of the year we saw a restriction of availability of commercial paper. The availability of commercial paper is, again, increasing, so we are making use of that at very interesting rates. I go back to Mark for the outlook.
Thank you. So before digging into the outlook, I think it's we should recognize that this is a somewhat difficult exercise this year. There is limited visibility for two reasons. One, there is quite a degree of uncertainty in terms of end-user demand for in many sectors of the economy. And on top of that, we have a destocking effect that is also creating a degree of uncertainty and that is not helping in terms of visibility. So let me start and comment about how we see things developing in the various segments. In advanced materials, the start of the year is more or less of the same quality as the last quarter of 2008. I wouldn't say a mirror image, although very close to it. In electro-optic materials, we continue to have very strong sales level, very strong activity levels, and the order book, I must say, is in very good shape. And we will keep expanding our substrate capacity as we need that capacity and those new capabilities to meet the demand, in particular for the new applications. In the rechargeable battery segment, the demand remains low for the time being, as there we see very clearly our customers continuing to run down their inventories. And while I would say we have at this stage limited visibility beyond the next couple of months or the next three or four months, I think it's reasonable to expect that overall the year will be a tough year for portable electronics applications. In precious metal services, I would say that we expect in the refining and recycling activities the performance to stay above or well above the normalized levels of recurring EBIT that we had indicated earlier, that we have repeated earlier. And we will also continue to benefit to a certain extent from some degree of protection against, I would say, the low precious metal prices. If the metal prices that we see today continue to persist, as a result of the contractual arrangements that we made a while ago for 2009 and to a lesser extent for 2010. It is likely, however, that our recurring EBIT will be somewhat lower than the exceptional levels that we achieved in the course of 2008. In 2008, we had an unusual conjunction of positive factors and trends in terms of materials availability, in terms of pricing, and again, materials availability not only in the industrial byproducts, but also in end-of-life materials. There are some signs of more challenging supply conditions in the sector. You have seen that some smelters in Europe and in other parts of the world have either announced or implemented capacity reductions or have shut down their capacities, sometimes temporarily, sometimes also shutdowns are of a definitive nature, and this may start to affect the availability of their residue streams, industrial residue streams, for recycling and refining activities. Today, we still have a significant level of activity because the arrivals of raw materials, of materials to recycle, were very high and continued to be very high in the last part of 2008. There is one exception, though, that's in the end-of-life materials. We saw the arrival of spent automotive catalyst decrease in the second part of last year, and this is somewhat logical, I would say, as people stop buying new cars. They keep their old cars, and those do not go to the scrapyard, so there is a more limited quantity of spent car catalyst that becomes available on the market for recycling, and we would expect that trend to continue throughout 2009. Finally, as far as the refining activities are concerned, we also had, I was talking about the conjunction of exceptional factors in 2008. We also had very high price conditions for some of the byproducts and secondary products that come out of the process, such as selenium, tellurium, indium, etc. And those prices have also started to trend down in the second part of last year. And those can, unlike PGM or precious metal prices, are more difficult to get protection for through contractual arrangements. In metals management, I would also expect to return to the more normalized level of profitability that we alluded to, of some 10% of REBIT, of recurring EBIT, as the volatility, we would not expect the volatility and trading conditions that we had in 2008 to repeat in 2009. So overall, for precious metal services, we continue to expect very good results and profitability, although at a somewhat reduced level compared to 2008. In precious metals products and catalysts, the activity level and the performance levels will be dependent to a degree on the automotive industry development. I think it's important that to state that we have not lost nor gained any market share in automotive catalyst. And our platform mix has actually evolved more or less in line with the market. So we would expect that the Umicore revenues in that segment would evolve or should evolve in line with car production. There is limited visibility today in terms of what the next few months will bring in the automotive sector. However, we have to recognize that the inventory situation is not very promising. Last year, the production levels of passenger cars have by far outpaced the sales by more than 4 million units. So the inventory levels at the end of 2008 have increased by a significant amount, and those inventories have to be worked out of the system in first instance. We also see some supporting measures coming from governments in many regions, such as incentives that are being offered in several European countries to scrap old cars and buy new ones, less polluting, newer cars. We also see reduced tax being implemented in China to support sales of new cars. So at some stage, those measures will also start to have an effect on the market. Again, at this stage, however, I think that the inventory situation has to be resolved first before the supporting measures start to have a truly visible effect on the market. We have seen many different projections from industry sources, from industry analysts for the automotive sector, and it is difficult to make out what production will look like in 2009. However, I think it's reasonable to expect that production will again be down on the prior year levels and could possibly be significantly down on the 2008 levels. In the other precious metals products businesses, we see trends today that are somewhat similar to what we had in the second part of last year. I would say reduced demand in the electronics and construction industry. And also we see now reduced demand from a high purity glass from the high purity glass sector, as some of these expansion projects that were anticipated for displays are now being postponed. In jewelry, again, we have a different trend. The business continues to do well, unlike many other segments. In zinc specialties, again, there the trend is somewhat similar to what we had in the second part of the year. In building products today, the trends are still reasonably good despite the slowdown in the construction sector, and that has to do with two factors. The first one is the fact that what we deliver today has to do with construction projects in the residential sector, has to do with projects that were initiated before the crisis and that are continuing. Secondly, it is the residential sector that is mostly affected by the slowdown in the economy and the credit crunch, while the non-residential build continues at a fairly decent pace. And if you look at our business positioning, we have about 40% of our revenues going into residential and 60% going into 40% going into residential new build, and 60% going either into non-residential or going into renovation projects, and there the trends continue to be supportive of our business. We also see, as part of the state packages to support the economy, a lot of infrastructure projects going on, such as airports and other projects, and this will also be somewhat supportive of our activity in the sector. Overall, while we have limited visibility at this stage, I think it's reasonable to expect that the economic downturn will continue to affect a number of our businesses in the short term. And as a result of that, our operating profits in the first half should be well below the record levels that we had in the first half of 2008. As I mentioned, the timing and extent of an economic recovery will depend to a large extent on how fast and how fast the destocking process goes and how quickly it is done and over with. I would say that despite the short-term challenges that we see, the long-term growth drivers for the company remain intact, and in certain instances they may even have strengthened as we see an accelerated move to cleaner technologies in many of the industries that we are serving, and our portfolio of technologies and our research portfolio positions us particularly well to benefit from this accelerating trend towards cleaner technologies, not only in the automotive sector, but also in other applications, and such as in recycling or in energy storage and production. Also, we are very well positioned because we have a very strong balance sheet. We have kept our financial discipline in the past years, and this serves us well today. With the financial strength and the financial condition of Umicore today, we can, in the short term, work on the what needs to be done to preserve the competitive positions of our businesses, while at the same time continuing to work in an uninterrupted manner and uninterrupted pace on our longer-term development projects, and we can continue or maintain our commitment to longer-term capital expenditures and research programs, and we can maintain that in a fully intact manner. So we are extremely confident that we will be in a strong position to manage this dual challenge, the short-term challenge that we have commented on, and at the same time continuing to grow the business for the long term. And I think that the fact that the board decided to maintain the dividend payment at times where you see many companies are scrapping their dividend shows also that the sign of confidence that the board has that indeed the plans that we are currently pursuing are right, and that the financial condition of the group is strong as we continue to generate cash flows. So, this being said, as a concluding remark, I would like now to open the floor for questions, and I suggest that we start by taking questions from the room.
Yes, I'm Arno Gustens, ING. Three questions. First of all, regarding the cost-cutting measures that that you've already taken at the end of last year and maybe in early 2009, can you give us the impact that it could have on the P&L, so the expected improvement in profitability? Secondly, I mean, still linked to the first question, what is the cost of these measures? I mean, I saw that there was a charge in 2008. Do you expect more cost in 2009? And thirdly, do you expect further measures with regards to restructuring? That's my first question.
Let me maybe start with the questions. The impact on the P&L in 2009 will be, I would say, limited in a way. You have noticed that the majority of the measures are of temporary nature. It's technical unemployment, it's reduced work time, and while these measures are necessary and the most appropriate to give us the flexibility that we need, they have, and retaining the competencies in-house, they have a limited impact on the P&L. And also the non-temporary measures, the structural measures that have been taken will have a limited impact in a way on the P&L. You know that we are not production or labor intensive, we don't have very much labor and cost intensive operations, and as I mentioned earlier, we have not touched on our, I would say, more expensive R&D programs, because this is the future of the business, and we don't want to move into those areas. The charges relating to the restructuring measures have to a large extent been already taken in the 2008 P&L. However, as you indicated, some of these measures were announced and implemented in January only, and so could not be provisioned in the course of 2008. So there may be some further non-recurring charges in the 2009 relating to restructuring. Do we envisage further measures? I think that this will depend obviously on how markets develop, and obviously all of our business units have to continue to adjust to market demand, as they have always done. I mean, this is not a new situation. We continue to do that, so I cannot exclude that further measures would be necessary. Again, in that respect, I would like to repeat that our philosophy is clearly that we don't want to take any measures that would compromise the long-term development potential of the group. So that has, I would say, long-term implications in terms of growth potential, and at the same time limits somewhat the potential for cost reductions in the short term.
Thank you. The second question with regards to PMS. So you expect, let's say, lower volumes coming from both industrial byproducts and possibly end of life. Can you give us an idea of the level of decline that you would expect?
It's for the industrial byproducts, it's difficult to quantify it at this stage because for several reasons. One is that some of the production cuts have only been announced and not yet been implemented, so we have no clear view on if and when the announced production cuts will be implemented and what effect that will be that will have. Secondly, we have, I would say, risks of reduced availability due to some closures, smelter closures. At the same time, such closures may also provide one-off opportunities for us in terms of receiving materials coming from cleaning up the pipeline and cleaning up the flow sheet of those installations that have to close indefinitely. So the balance of those two trends is at this stage difficult to quantify. In terms of the end-of-life materials, and I mentioned specifically the spent catalyst, there the we expect the decline to be somewhat in line with what we saw in the second part of last year in terms of availability, and that was that was double digit in percentage terms, so it is not dramatic, but it's still noticeable.
And linked to that, given that you hedged your prices over, let's say, long term, the lower volumes that you expect, would that impact any way your hedging program, or would that incur a loss or a charge?
No, because we never hedged the full exposure, or we never hedged the full contract amount, because indeed there is always an uncertainty about the quantities that will effectively be delivered and processed, and the timing for delivery and processing. So we need to keep a certain margin, not to end up being overhedged. And the margin that we have built in our contractual arrangements is indeed sufficient to avoid such the situation that you describe.
And finally, in terms of CapEx, so are you still holding on to your CapEx plans with regards to catalyst, so the new plant in China, South Korea, India? And the same question for the germanium and the cathode material expansion.
Globally, I would say yes, because the investments, the three investments that you mentioned, have to do mostly with new capabilities rather than adding capacity. And clearly, when I said that we're maintaining our investment programs for 2009 and that we would have CapEx levels that would be in the same order, give or take a few percentage points, same order as in 2008, clearly the priority goes to new capabilities rather than expanding capacities. That's a very clear trend that we have. This is the case for the cathode materials investments in South Korea and in China. We're building their production lines that will enable us to produce the next generation cathode materials and precursors. We're not expanding capacity for the existing materials. It's the same for substrates, where there we need a combination of capacity and capabilities. Capacity because the demand is there and the order book is there. And we have also, as I mentioned, demand for new applications in terrestrials, concentrator photovoltaics, and in LEDs that is developing very nicely and that we need to feed with new types of materials and with additional capacity. In automotive catalysts, the priority there again goes to capability upgrades, and whether it's on the technical side in the testing infrastructure, which is fairly significant for the automotive catalyst business unit, or whether it's related to the production facilities. We continue to bring new technologies to the market, and those new technologies, those new product technologies, continue to require a process upgrade and new process technologies, so it is important to continue to invest. There again, the priority is process capabilities or testing capabilities rather than adding capacity. As far as some of the new projects are concerned, the project to build a plant in India continues, is maintained, and construction should start sometime in the course of this year.
Good morning, Ben Hoss from KBC Securities. I also have a couple of questions. First, on the precious metal products and catalysts business, we saw that associates year on year were up quite significantly in the second half, whereas the total recurring EBIT of the division was down significantly. Could you maybe explain the different trends between the associates and non-associates business in that division?
Okay, so let me start with PMP&C. The answer is clearly to be found in the contribution from some of our Asian associates that had a somewhat over-proportionate improvement in their profitability in the second part of last year. And for the and then the question was about the results globally. We'd have to look at the details. I don't have the information readily available.
Yes, it was flat in H2. Yes, I will check.
Okay, we'll clarify that at a later stage.
But I had another question on net working capital. I may have been somewhat naive or too optimistic on net working capital, but when looking at the evolution of prices year on year and with assumptions on volumes, I had a clear decline in mind. Could you clarify this, and will Umicore be in a position to proceed to a more aggressive lowering of net working capital in the first part of 2009?
I think we see different effects. I think what you have to keep in mind is that the Delphi integration, right, added some working capital and generated an increase in working capital in the first three quarters of the year, which had an important impact. It is also true that after that we have seen a very sharp decline, and that that decline is continuing, right? Because of the impact of metal prices, which we have pretty much had, that's in, and the decrease of business, where we will see, you know, the impact also continuing, and we already see that in January. Yeah.
So,
in
other words,
seeing a further decrease. Yeah.
I think maybe if we take one more question from the floor, and then we'll
can
switch
we
to the phone lines.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry, Wim, we'll take
no.
you on a second one.
Okay, no problem. I know you're traditionally not saying that much about the hedging part in precious metal services, but I try again my luck. Could you maybe give a little bit more color about the second half performance in 2008? How much, or an order of magnitude, how much is coming from the hedging contracts in that?
I think your assumption was extremely accurate. So no, we're not going to give, and we're not in a position to give more color on this, because it's not only about hedging, it's really about contracts and contractual arrangements, and the exposure is embedded in the contracts, and it's really impossible to isolate the pure price effect. So no, we're not going to try to do that exercise.
Okay. And then if I just may, one follow-up question on the previous question I asked about the associates in precious metal products and catalysts. You mentioned that it was coming from a significant improvement in some Asian associate businesses. Is that because of some ramp-up process or so that meant that 2007 performance was still relatively low as the lines were in ramping up, or what was the reason for that improvement?
No, actually, we had some non-linear earnings developments in one of our associates in particular. It's not necessarily reflecting the business trend, so it's not something that you should expect would repeat in the years to come.
Okay, thank you.
Perhaps now we can move to some questions from the phone lines, and then we'll move back to taking any more questions from the floor. I think Rim has been waiting patiently, sir.
Yes, of course. And if there are anybody else on the phone who wants to ask any questions, could you please use this opportunity to press 01 on your phone keypad now, and then you'll enter a queue, and then after you're announced, just ask your question. And as we were saying before, we go over to Rim Banani of Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have three quick questions. The first one, I'm a bit confused with the remarks on precious metal services, and just seeking a bit of clarification here. So you're saying there that EBIT should be slightly below the record 2008 level. If I understand correctly, is this a matter of longer-term contracts that you have there? I remember that you started quoting longer-term contracts in H1, H2, 08. And how did the order book develop between end of 08 and beginning of 09? Did you see new contracts, new orders, or you're more running on what you had at the end of the year? Or is it simply a pure hedging pricing question? That's the first question. The second question is on the precious metal products and catalysts. Should we get more news flow in terms of HDD penetration by end of 2009 as the regulation enters in Europe? Can we have a bit more flavor on how you're seeing truck producers approaching that? And can you also remind me your exposure in China to local versus international producers? The final question is on currency. Could you maybe try and quantify the impact you're expecting from currency at the EBIT level from 08, or at least remind us of the overall impact in 07? Thank you.
Okay, that's a long list, Rim. Let me start with the first question with regards to precious metals refining activities. The comments that I made are really not reflecting the way that our positioning or contracts have developed in the course of 08. In 08, we have continued to win contracts for the short, medium, and long term, and so we continue to work and strengthen our positioning in the marketplace. What I'm referring to is that while we have contracts, the quantities that may be delivered against those contracts will fluctuate over time depending on the production levels of our own suppliers. And as we see smelters shutting down or reducing capacity, even if we have a contract in place, eventually those moves would translate into a reduced availability of materials for us. It may not necessarily have an effect on pricing because those would be the pricing levels would be set at the time of the contract. It's just a volume effect that would take place. However, as I mentioned, we continued to win contracts and to strengthen our position there. As far as precious metals products and catalysts is concerned, I would say we do not expect a major news flow in the heavy-duty segment by the end of 2009, because we expect simply the activity levels, I mean, especially in respect of Euro 5, if I may clarify, because we expect the activity levels to be extremely modest, if any, in the heavy-duty segments in the course of 2009. You may have seen some announcement from the major truck makers at the end of 2008 that were giving an indication of their order book, or the absence of orders in their books, I should rather say. So we do not expect major news flow. This being said, the other reason for my statement is that most, if not all, of Euro 5 awards are now made, and there isn't any, or practically no business left to be awarded for Euro 5, and we are working primarily on Euro 6 programs in terms of development phase at this point in time. The automotive catalyst exposure in China, coming to your third question, exposure to domestic Chinese producers versus the foreign OEMs. We're not giving a detailed breakdown. I don't want to disclose a detailed breakdown of our revenue base or customer base. I can say that a significant majority of our programs today are with foreign OEMs or foreign OEMs and their partners in China, and the domestic exposure to domestic OEMs is less than half of our. Of course, if the other one is the significant majority, is less than half of our business in the country. And finally, as far as currencies are concerned, I will maybe Tim wants to answer that question.
On that, if you look at just our publicly stated strategic sensitivity to the US dollar, obviously with the rate changing between 2007 and 2008, we faced a negative impact there of about 10 million euro. If you look at the combined negative impact of translational effects from a currency point of view relating to the earnings we generate in other currencies like the won, South African rand, Canadian dollar, these kind of things, and also the exposure we have to currencies linked with, or primarily the dollar linked with metal-generated revenues that are unhedged, there is around 20 million euro headwind combined. So the overall negative impact that we would have felt if due to the changing currency situation was around 30 million euro approximately.
Thank you.
Just if I may come back to the question about China, just to help a little bit with and add a little bit of clarity. You may remember when we acquired the Delphi business that there was a significant leg of that business in China. And before the acquisition, the Umicore business, AC business in China, was predominantly with foreign OEMs, and a very modest portion of our business at the time was with domestic Chinese producers, while, on the contrary, the business we acquired from Delphi in China was predominantly with domestic Chinese producers, and only a very small portion was with foreign producers. That was also the part of the complementarity that we liked in the combination of those businesses.
Thank you.
The next question is from Sophie Jodier of Citigroup. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Yes, morning. I've got a couple of questions. So just on precious metal services again, just trying to understand again the sort of quantification. You said that metals management in 2009 would move back to sort of more normal, a 10% of divisional EBIT. Just wondered whether you could give an indication of what it was in the second half of 2008. And second on that division, you mentioned that you expect to see a negative impact from smelters closing down in terms of availability of residues. Have you actually seen that yet, or is that something you expect to come through for the rest of the year? That's a question on the precious metal services. And then second, just on autocatalysts, in the text you talk about the stopping of incentive programs for diesel retrofits in South America and Korea. Was that expected? And can you give a little bit more detail over what happened there and whether it was significant? And that's all. Thanks.
Okay, so let me start with metals management. So the performance in the second half of 2008 was indeed at the high end of the range, and again, as I mentioned earlier, around 20% of recurring EBIT rather than the 10% that we had mentioned as being a typical proportion for that activity. And indeed, we would expect the proportion of profits coming from metals management to go back to the normalized levels for the full year 2009. Of course, I cannot totally rule out that the market would go crazy again, and there would be a tremendous volatility in the course of 2009. I'm just saying we don't see that today, and our expectations are based on the current picture. In terms of availability of recycling materials for the precious metals activity, as far as the industrial residues and byproducts are concerned, we have not seen yet a slowdown or any sizable slowdown in the arrivals, and that's why I was talking about the uncertainty, because some of the shutdowns have been announced and have yet to be implemented. In some cases, the material we receive may be also related to the cleanup of installations that are being shut down. So as far as the industrial byproducts, the pace of arrival was very good throughout 2008, throughout the end of 2008, which means that the plant has sufficient feedstock to operate now. The area where we have already seen the slowdown in the second part of last year, and it started slightly before the fourth quarter, is in spent automotive catalysts. It started somewhat towards the end of the third quarter, so it's been already felt and seen, and continues to be seen at a similar pace. And then finally, your question about the retrofit programs. There are two places where we were extremely active, and as a market leader in the heavy-duty retrofit programs, that is in South America and Korea. In both places, we are market leader or a market leader. And in South America, the program was interrupted. Can't remember exactly in which month of last year, but it was early last year. And in South Korea, it was also interrupted very early last year, because the government figured out that the efficiency of the program was not meeting its expectations. So they have decided to reduce the subsidies that they had allocated to that program, and which were quite sizable. I'm not sure about South America. I know that in Korea, the government is now considering alternative programs and is working out alternative programs to resume some sort of a retrofit scheme. At this stage, we do not know, however, what form it could take and when it would kick off. Those programs were significant for us. We're not widely involved in retrofit, or we were not widely involved in heavy-duty retrofit programs across the globe, and actually were more specifically and more intimately involved in those two regions. So that's why I think it was worth mentioning that this had an effect on our revenues and profitability levels.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Could I quickly ask a couple of very short questions to Martin, just sort of guidance for next year. What sort of tax rate should we sort of be thinking about for next year? And corporate charges were a bit higher than I'd expected for this year. Is that sort of reasonable level in terms of sort of minus 50 million to be expected ongoing? Thanks.
So first of all, in terms of tax rate, I think you know that we've always said that the high 20s was a good type of range. So anywhere around where we are now, where we were last year, which was close to 28%, seems reasonable. Depending, of course, on the geographical regions at that point in time. You know, if we have a particular hit in a certain geographic region, that can always have an impact. Now, as far as corporate costs are concerned, there were some unusual items, let me put it differently, not unusual, but non-recurring items in the corporate costs. So I think that you should look at an outlook for corporate costs that's slightly lower than what you see now. I mean, in all the corporate departments, already in the budgeting phase, in view of the economic situation, we worked for flat budgets on the corporate departments. But of course, there are investments going on in the IT field, which we intend to continue. And more importantly, the corporate R&D efforts, as Mark said, will continue and will not be cut down.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Next question is from Neil Tyler of JP Morgan. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good morning. A couple of questions, please. Firstly, looking at the Auto Catalyst business again, two questions there. A, are there any retrofit programs that are subsidized that you perhaps would view at risk currently? And B, you mentioned the mix effect from a slightly sort of smaller value per vehicle progression. I wonder if you're able to sort of talk a little bit around that and maybe even quantify that. Secondly, on precious metal services, beyond 2009, you mentioned that you're partially hedged for 2010. Should we still assume that your previous guidance for a sustainable EBIT for this business is around about 90 million? And that the metals management part of that, is that the 10% you're referring to would be applicable to that 90 million? And then finally, some longer term guidance perhaps on CapEx and R&D budgets beyond the step up you're anticipating for next year, please. Thank you.
Okay, let me. The line was not so good, so let me make sure that I've captured the questions correctly. So the first question was whether we see other retrofit programs being at risk.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, we're not involved so much in retrofit programs beyond the two that we mentioned in South America and in Korea. Some other programs may be at risk. They would not have a meaningful impact on Umicore's performance in automotive catalyst. Retrofit has not been typically an area of focus of ours. We have mostly focused our development efforts on new build and new platforms rather than on retrofits.
Okay.
So really, Korea and South America were some sort of exceptions in that respect. In as far as the mix effect, it is not fully quantified or quantifiable at this point in time. I would say that we're moving in sync with the market in terms of the move to smaller engines, and the move to smaller engines means to a certain extent a reduction in the number of catalyst bricks, the average catalyst bricks or catalyst volume per engine, and may tend also with the current technologies to reduce somewhat the value and the degree of sophistication of the catalysts that are being used. However, as legislation and emission regulations continue to tighten, even for smaller engines, the degree of sophistication and complexity will be on the rise again, and this will make the catalyst this will or may impact the catalyst value for small cars in the future.
Sorry, can I just on that point? So your guidance of revenues in that business tracking the production levels of automotive producers worldwide essentially it assumes that the value per vehicle is net neutral. So the new legislation is offsetting the mix effect. Is that correct?
Yes, I think that's correct. There may be one caveat is that we see a continued further penetration of the filter business in the light-duty applications, as you know that in Europe the filters will become mandatory on new models starting in October 2009, not on new cars, but on new models being built starting in October 2009. So that will also continue to drive somewhat our revenue developments and bottom line. I mean, this may have been included in your question and in your reflection about the mix effects, though.
Okay, no, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't capture the question that you raised about precious metal services.
I recall maybe incorrectly, but that prior to the step up in metals prices in the last year or so, the guidance had been for a normalised level of REBIT from that business is somewhere around 90 million. Is that still the case, given your visibility that you do have on contracts beyond 2009, sorry, this year, and your comment on the management business as being 10% of that? Would that apply to that number as opposed to obviously the inflated numbers that you're able to generate at the moment?
You're almost correct, because the guidance that we gave a while ago was that the normalized level of recurring EBIT for that segment was in the range of 60 to 70 million euro rather than 90. So all other things, all other comments remain valid if you just adjust the benchmark to the guidance we gave earlier.
Okay, thank you.
Your last question was about the guidance for capital expenditures and R&D programs beyond 2009. For capital expenditures, I think it's a bit premature because our capital expenditures have, I would say, two or three components. Large drivers, one is long-term development projects, long-term growth projects. The other one is maintenance capex and shorter-term capacity or capability adjustments. As far as the latter is concerned, it is really premature to give some guidance. What I can say is that the trend for longer-term growth projects, whether it's R&D or capital expenditures, will likely continue. The trend that you observed in 2008 and 2009 will likely continue in 2010, so beyond 2009. However, this is very, I would like this to be kept as a very vague statement, because I think it's a bit early to mention that.
Okay, thank you. And on R&D?
On the line from Andrew and Laurent, and perhaps if we can take those quickly in the next 5 minutes and then wrap up.
Yeah, and then we'll have to wrap up, and of course we'll have the chance to address some further questions with you during the road shows in the coming days and weeks.
Question?
Yes, of course. The next question is from Andrew Stott of Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning. Question for Mark, and thanks for taking the question. It was just on the restructuring, actually. I think you made it clear you're emphasizing the temporary nature of it, but it still looks reasonably material, if my maths are right. I think it's just over 5% of your employee base, including your associates. So what cost savings should we see this year and next from these measures? That's the first question. And the second question was on the buyback. From my maths, you've got $55 million left to do. Do we just assume that happens through this year, or is there any change of plan? Thank you.
So on the first question, your math are right, indeed. The proportion is about 5% of the workforce if we include the associates. That's right. However, as I mentioned earlier, this is not in the cost categories, in the high cost categories. Labor cost in some of our production facilities is not comparable to the cost of, unit cost in SG&A, sales, marketing efforts, or in research programs. So again, I'm afraid that the effect will be somewhat limited on the P&L, and you can definitely not use the average personnel cost to extrapolate those numbers into euros. That's one. Then on the share buyback, the program indeed is still open. We have, again, as you mentioned, some 55 million to go to reach completion of 400 million euro of the program that started in November 2007. The program is open and continues. Obviously, in the past weeks, the program was closed because of the blackout period that precedes the publication of the results. The program is open. However, I cannot give you any indication of the pace or timing for completion today.
Okay, thanks a lot. Cheers.
The final question is from Laurent Favre of UBS. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good morning, and thanks for taking my question. Just coming back on this restructuring and maybe another way to look at it, if my math is correct and if we exclude the 13 million of associates in PMP&C, you may have been very close to maybe EBIT losses in PMP&C in Q4. And as you said, global car production might be down significantly in 2009. And I was just really wondering in terms of operating leverage, do you see yourself in a worse position than your competitors? And is it the case that this restructuring might bring you more in line with the cost base of your competitors?
As you would expect, we have done that analysis, and that's why I did mention in my comments during the presentation that, for instance, in AC, we had not lost or gained any market share, that we were evolving in line with the market. Indeed, we have checked in all of our markets or whether our positioning was affected in any way or extent, and we come to the conclusion that in all segments where we operate, we have being able to maintain our position. So I think that we're moving in sync with the markets, and so do most of our competitors.
But just as a follow-up, that's in terms of top line, and I can see that your top line indeed hasn't moved that much, but in terms of profits, it looks like Q4 profits in PMP&C were extremely low. And if we analyze the Q4 volumes of car production, which might be an assumption for the rest of 2009, I'm just wondering in terms of the profitability of PMP&C, it could be indeed very low for the rest of 2009.
You're right in terms of revenues, in terms of profits. I think you would also reconcile the figures if you took into account, compared to some of our competitors, the currency effects that Tim has outlined. So if you exclude currency effects, no, there is no difference whatsoever in terms of profitability developments compared to our competitors. So I think that may have been masking somewhat or complicating somewhat the comparability of performances.
Thank you.
We now hand back to Mr. Grinberg for any closing comments.
Thank you, and thank you for your attention during the presentation and the questions. Again, we'll have a chance to address further questions during the roadshows in the coming weeks. If there is one thing that I would like to repeat as a closing statement, again, it is the fact that we're confident that we're in an extremely good shape today to pursue a long-term development project. We have the means to do so, we have the resources to do so, while at the same time managing the short-term difficulties in the most sensible manner. So thank you for your attention, and we'll see you later.
This now concludes today's call. Thank you all very much for attending.